This episode of The Ready Room is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform for creating a blog, website, portfolio, or an online store. To create your own space, visit squarespace.com and save 10% by using offer code TREK11. And also by Zoe, the world's first personal voice companion, enabling Star Trek comm badge-like interactions with Twitter, Facebook, Spotify, smart objects, and much, much more. To find out more and to support the Kickstarter campaign, visit zoe.me/trekfm. That's xowi.me/trekfm. Plus, if you'd like to support our programming personally, visit trek.fm/donate to get our alien badges and art prints featuring original illustration by Tobu Ushi.
I'm Jeff Combs. I'm everywhere on Star Trek, and you keep tuning in to Trek FM.
Welcome to The Ready Room, show number 118, A Problem with the Teeth. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me this week is Charlene Schmidt. We'll be talking about some Star Trek news, including the winners of the We Love Fine T-shirt design contest, Star Trek Online's debut on Mac, the return of Michael Dorn as Worf, and rumors about Joe Cornish directing the next film. Then in the feature, we're joined by Mariel Kieran to discuss the Voyager episode, Faces. So let's step into the Ready Room. Hello, Char. It's great to have you on the Ready Room. Of course, it's Voyager week, so I'm guessing most listeners probably guessed that you'd be co-hosting this week. How's everything going up there in Fargo?
Pretty good. I am starting a new job tomorrow morning, bright and early. I'm actually looking forward to it. After months of feast or famine and freelance work, I'm ready for a steady gig, and My worst fear is that the cat's going to freak out and not know what to do with himself because he's been so used to having me in the house for, you know, pretty much all day, every day, for the most part, the last for a while.
He'll probably leave you a few presents while you're gone. You know how cats are.
Thanks. Yeah, that'll be great if and when he does that.
Well, they do. That's what cats
they do.
You know, feast, famine, and freelance work. I think that if Tolstoy were alive today, that sounds like a novel he would write.
That's very true. Yeah, I would read it too.
It'd take you a little time though, because it'd be really long.
Yeah, that's true. And since I've got a new job, it's full time. I'm not going to quite have the time that I used to just for leisure activities. It might take me a while to get through it, but if it's good.
You know, you talk about soldiering through stuff though, because there was only one class when I was in university for this, and it was my major. Mm-hmm. I had to take Russian literature at 8 a.m.
Oh,
now,
my
gosh. Imagine you get out of bed, you get into the classroom by 8 a.m. to discuss Russian literature. It was not easy.
You were a trooper. I'm pretty sure that
the writing's good, but at 8 a.m., your brain isn't quite working for that yet.
No amount of coffee could mentally get me up to par for that sort of activity. Not at that hour.
No. Well, you know, Tolstoy may have written that book if he were alive today. One thing I don't think he would have been doing is entering the WeLoveFine.com Star Trek t-shirt design contest. But that is going to be our first news story today.
Yeah, this is a very cool thing. I've been keeping tabs on this since they announced the contest, and I've looked at quite a few of the entries. I mean, they had more than 400 people enter, which that's pretty cool in and of itself. But not only that, but they had some guest judges to go along with the contest, and I think that helped promote it a little bit. So it's really cool. I mean, if you want LeVar Burton to look at your t-shirt, I mean, this is what you did. You put it into this contest. And, you know, had I thought of something nice and clever to enter myself, I would have done the same thing, but I didn't. Oh, well.
You know, that shirt that we all have, that we all ordered about a year or two ago, with the quick brown fox does a barrel roll.
You mean this shirt that I'm wearing tonight? Dog.
Exactly, the one you're wearing tonight. If that had been in this contest, LeVar Burton's a judge, I'm pretty sure it would have won.
He would have barrel rolled all over it.
The barrel
won't
repeat or
odd. All over the shirt.
Yeah.
You put the entry on the floor.
Yeah, it's like,
we have to print
on it.
This
yes.
one. Put it on the floor and he rolls mm-hmm. across. Meanwhile, Matt Mira and the staff of StarTrek.com, who were also judging, are just looking like, what are you doing, LeVar? There's no warp core breach going on right now.
But
stand up and
we'll,
help us finish this
we'll
judging.
We'll all watch this on YouTube and just smile inside. And he knows who his audience is. We'd get it.
That's right. However, I will say, LeVar Burton did pick a Geordi LaForge shirt as his judge's pick, mm-hmm. which was the shirt called Elementary by Tom Burns, which features Data as Sherlock and Geordi as Watson.
Yeah, and this is a cool t-shirt. This was actually one of my favorites. But I'm actually a little sad that my favorite didn't get picked by any of the judges. And if you had to guess...
I bet it's my favorite also.
Really?
I know what you're going to say.
Well, okay, yeah, I want to know what you think I would... I want you to guess what I would pick.
Well, okay, this is what I'm thinking. And if I'm wrong, then you can tell me. But...
Okay.
This was, it did win. It won $150 as one of the runners up. It's the very, very last shirt that they show on the page on StarTrek.com. It's called Riker Leans by Matt McLean. It's got Riker with his foot up, and it's showing the exact angles at which Riker raises his leg. And I think it is the best design in the contest.
I don't see why this didn't win the grand prize myself, but actually, no. My
Neither do I. Seriously, I don't understand.
Yeah. I would seriously buy that shirt. I want it. I will buy copies of it for everybody for the Trek FM team. No, my absolute favorite wasn't one of the finalists at all, actually. There was a really cute one that is kind of an ode to Spot. And you know me, I love cats. And yeah. I would have totally picked the Spot shirt.
So what was the design? Did it have the words from the poem on it, or did it have Spot on it?
Oh, gosh, I'm trying to think here. I think it has a vector illustration of Spot. And then as for the text, I honestly don't remember that much. It might have been the Ode to Spot
Probably
poem.
An excerpt from the poem, I bet, right?
More likely than not. I mean, yeah. It's been a little while since I've seen it.
Yeah, I didn't see that one. And right now we just have the winners that we can see here on the
it
page.
Kind of, it's got a little bit of the same coloring that Elementary has, you know, kind of those yellow, goldish mm-hmm. tones. And it's a cute kitty cat shirt. I would have totally bought it, but oh well.
Yeah. Well, the grand prize was Iconic Trek by David Copet. And it's an interesting kind of Enterprise motif. A little bit abstract. You've got the TOS colors, but then you've got nice, and it's kind of hard to see in the image that we have access to because we don't have a huge image. We can't see really close up, mm-hmm. but it looks like very nice illustrations of the faces of characters from across the, at least TNG and TOS, I can definitely see here. I can't tell if we've got, I think I see Janeway there behind Picard though, so it looks like
characters
she's from
in
various
there.
Other series.
Yeah, this is kind of cool because... Everybody's segregated by their uniform color.
Oh, that's true, yeah. That's why you don't have every single character from every single series in there. So there's
yeah.
no quirk in there.
A little crowded. And it is cool. It's not my absolute favorite, but I do see why it did get the pick.
Yeah, it's not my favorite either. I seriously, if I were judging, Riker Leans would have won the grand prize. That would have been my pick.
Well, we also might be a little biased at Trek FM.
Well, it's just clever. It's so clever.
It is.
It's a nice illustration. It's simple.
Original.
It's the great joke about Riker and his leg, and it's creative.
Yeah.
Showing the angles. It's a really nice design.
It
I
is.
I really like it. Matt Mira also had a judge's pick. He chose The Big Goodbye. I have to say, as a t-shirt, I don't really care for this t-shirt if I were going to buy it for myself. This is by Brian Smith. I will say, however, that the illustration work is really fantastic. I think Brian did a really nice job illustrating Picard, Data, and Beverly.
You think it would make a better poster than a t-shirt?
Yeah, I think it would make a better poster. It would make a really cool poster.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah. I would love to have this as a, I don't know, an 11 by 17 poster or something like that. 18 yeah. by 24.
Because the shading on the face, like Picard's face, the shading and all is really nicely done.
Yeah, so. It is. Yeah. It's very good.
Yeah. StarTrek.com, their judge's pick was a really simple design called Make It So by Derek Gurr. Stylistically, the character is very similar to Riker in the Riker Leans shirt.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know about this one. I mean, it just feels like I have to think that they're, and again, nothing against Derek here. I'm a little bit surprised knowing that they had 400 entries. This feels like a very ordinary design.
Yes. And yes, you nailed it.
And I do, by the way, I do judge design, international design competitions. I have for many, many years. So this is my judge's opinion. If I were judging a competition and this were an entry, it probably would not have been a judge's pick for me. But it's a nice, simple shirt. I like simple designs. And so I do really appreciate what Derek has done
me
here
too. Me
in
too.
Keeping it very simple.
Yeah, I like that, but I also agree, it's not that it's bad at all, it's just there's really nothing about it that really makes it stand out.
There were 400 entries.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all I'm saying. the other runner-up is called Dr. Noonien Soong Positronic Brains.
Yeah.
Since 2335.
No, I love this one.
It's a cool logo. It's got kind of an old-fashioned feel to it. I like the top of it, too, where you actually have the positronic network as a brain dome to cap off the top of the logo. It's pretty cool little
thing.
Yeah,
it's pretty decent.
There. Yeah. It says androids and more at the bottom.
Yeah, so I would definitely pick up the shirt. Nice.
What do you think about this other runners up here, Starfleet Girl by Danielle Jones?
You know, a lot of female Trekkies like to unite, you know, girl power and all that sort of stuff. I'm not terribly into that sort of thing, but what I appreciate about this shirt is the illustration work. I do think it's very cute. Did a very nice job of getting Dax and Troy, Uhura, Janeway, and looks like Yar onto this shirt.
Yeah, Yar's in there.
So it's okay. It's not my favorite, though, but it's good.
I think if it's Starfleet Girl, they should take a cue from To the Journey last week, and you need to have Naomi Wildman on there, because she actually literally is a Starfleet girl.
That is so true. Yes. Yes, they're missing that. But, I mean, Kira's also not on here, and you could totally go to town with all the female Trek characters. But then it makes me think, okay, you've got...
Getting racy here, Char, on the Ready Room.
Well, it's what I'm here for. But I mean, okay, then you've got Yar. Why not Dr. Crusher? They didn't kill off Dr. Crusher.
I think Yar is a favorite female character of female Trekkies because she was a strong woman. She's a strong female character displaced in time. You know, I always say about Yar that if The Next Generation had been written in the 2000s instead of in the late 80s, Yar would have been, she would have been more like Starbuck on the new Battlestar Galactica, I think.
So sick of it all!
Mm-hmm.
Would have been a very, very different character.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know. Just
So she's a I think she's a fan favorite, even though she was only on the show for a short while.
Okay. I'll take your word on that. I mean, she's not my favorite because any character getting eaten by a tar pit just doesn't do anything for me. Not really. But I did love her in yesterday's Enterprise. That was redemption for me.
That goes back to last week's Ready Room where Ben and I talked about the death scenes of different characters and who should have had a better death scene. So
yes. Yeah, that was a good discussion.
So anyway, these have been chosen. As we mentioned, the runners-up each received $150 cash. The grand prize winner received a random amount of money, $1,460. I don't know if there's some reason behind that number or not.
I mean, come on, up the ante just a little bit and go for the $1,470 so that you have the 47 reference. Come on!
Exactly. I will say, though, now, We Love Fine, they do know the 47 reference, because I remember when the campaign first came out, if you went to their website and you dragged the hero image, you know, the big banner artwork for it, if you drag that off to your desktop, The file name of that image was 47.jpg.
Oh, nice.
So they know, but yeah, I would have raised it up to $1,470 as
a just because.
Price.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Just because.
Missed opportunity.
So if you want these shirts, there are 6 shirts that are now available at welovefine.com, and the judges pick winners will be coming soon to the StarTrek.com shop. So you can keep your eye open there if you want to get your hands on the shirts. Char, let me ask you a question now. If you could play, you're like me, a Mac user.
Mm-hmm.
If you could play Star Trek Online on Mac, would you sometimes hop into a ship and fly around that massive multiplayer universe of Star Trek?
I tell you what, it's very tempting, that thought, because as a Mac user, I've not really had any access to Star Trek Online. The problem for me is time. I don't know how much time I could invest into it, but if I could just go around and take a gander at all this that I've been missing all this time, yeah, I would take it for a spin at the very least.
That's the same thing for me. So when the game came out, of course, I wanted to play it because I've been waiting all my life for a game like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I always wanted to have this type of Star Trek game because most of the Star Trek games that have come out haven't been very good. There's been a few good
ones,
but
yeah, it's true.
They've always left you lacking. Like I love Zelda. I'm a huge fan of The Legend of Zelda. I've played every Legend of Zelda going back to the very, very first one on the original NES. And what I like about Zelda is that it's open world, that you can just go anywhere.
Uh-huh.
And you can do anything. And the people writing the game anticipate things that you could do. Like, you could do things, you know, pick up a chicken and throw, or hit a chicken with a sword. I remember in earlier Zelda. And
Red,
you're thinking, like,
that.
You hit a chicken with a sword, nothing is really going to happen. But they'll actually put funny things in the game because they're anticipating, like, everything you might do. So you have that very open world feeling. And so with Star Trek games, I always wanted to have that open world, but it's Star Trek. And so when the game came out, it's Windows only.
Of course.
So, you know, I installed Windows. I mean, I have Windows installed on my Mac under Parallels because I occasionally need to go in there to do something for a client that mm-hmm. has to be done in Windows. Or back in the earlier days of web development, I really had to go there, use Windows Internet Explorer to check websites that I was developing to make sure. And then I had to write, you know, hack code to get it to work in Internet Explorer.
I'm sorry.
So I have it. But the thing is that Star Trek Online won't run very well under virtualization on a Mac because it really needs all the power of your graphics card. And if you have a monster graphics card like I do, because I do design work and video editing and such, you can't actually tap all that power by running Windows under Parallels. So what it means is that you have to actually boot your Mac like it's a Windows PC using Boot Camp.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have access. And when you do that, then you have access to all the power of your hardware, and STO runs really well. But it also means that you don't have access to any of your Mac applications while you're doing that.
Right.
And it also means that you have to quit everything you're doing, reboot your computer as a Windows machine, play the game, come back out, go back in, get everything set back up. And I just can't do that. I don't have time.
Yeah.
So I was excited to hear that on November 12th, finally at long last, the beta for Mac of Star Trek Online is going to be released. And it's one of those things where, like you, I don't have time to spend hours playing this game. But if it would run on my Mac and I could just hop in for 20 minutes occasionally,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
it would be fun to just kind of roam around and explore the universe a little bit.
Right, yeah, just to try it out. And now that we're going to get a beta for Mac after more than 3 years after the initial launch of the game, I'm kind of excited, and I will probably give it a download and see what it's about.
Especially because it's free to play these days, so
yeah.
You really don't have anything to lose.
Yeah, yeah, why not?
Except space on your hard drive and time as you become obsessed with it.
Yeah, yeah, that's just it. I don't have time to get sucked into a game. I'm actually sucked into watching Breaking Bad right now. So I've got to finish that first.
Well, maybe there will be a Breaking Bad mission in STO, and then you can just... you'll be in heaven.
The Klingons took the meth.
Is that what happened? Yeah. You have to chase them down. Yeah. That's why Kirk was going. It wasn't to get Khan. It was to get the meth back from the Klingons.
Yeah. Yeah. So you have to cross the neutral
Star
zone.
Star Trek Breaking Bad.
That'd be fantastic. Okay. And you've got like Captain Walter White, you know, and his little buddy. Yeah. Oh, gosh. I can see this.
I thought maybe that's what Keenzer was on now that he doesn't have any beans.
That's his sidekick instead of the junkie.
So, you know, you mentioned that this is 3 years after the launch of the game. And this is the thing. There were some comments on Star Trek Online, or I think it was their 1701 News, actually, where I got the story from. Some comments after the article. And one person said that, awesome news. I hate having to boot my Mac up as a PC, as it means I can't use any of my Mac programs, as I was just saying. Mm-hmm. And someone else said that, waste of time and resources, if you ask me. And this is the mentality that I don't get. So
yeah, why?
Why is it a waste of time and resources for the Perfect World and Cryptic to create a native Mac client for a game about Star Trek, which has millions and millions of fans worldwide? I hate that mentality, and I don't know why people have to make comments like that.
And I'm sorry, but so many people have Macs these days. I mean, this is a huge expansion to an audience that hasn't had access to it before. Yeah. This is a smart move.
They cite the numbers in the article that Apple has just under 11% of the PC market. This is the other thing that I think that game makers misunderstand. So when you state that number, you're talking about the PC market. Where are most computers located? In offices. An office has 200 PCs sitting on desks. Yes, the number is accurate if you talk about that. If you talk about home users, that number is not like that. Yeah. Home users have Macs. A lot of home users have Macs, and Macs are selling more and more every year, while Windows PC sales to the home market are either flat or declining. And a lot of it's the halo effect surrounding iPhones and all. But, you know, it's not even a debate about numbers for me. It's just the fact that if you walk into any given house, you're very likely to find a Mac as well as a PC, a Windows PC. So when you make a game like Star Trek Online, you really shouldn't ignore a large segment of your potential player pool for 3 years. So I'm glad that they are finally getting this out to us.
Yeah, same here. Because this was the only thing that was really holding me back, was I really didn't want to use boot camp and all of that hassle. I just, not really that worth it.
Because you have to buy a copy of Windows as well.
Well, that too, right? Yeah. I have a copy of Windows that I could install on the machine, but no, not if I don't have to, no.
Did you get that as part of another Breaking Bad mission?
Yeah, I acquired it on a little run. Yeah.
I thought so. All right, so I'm glad to see this is coming. Again, November 12th, it's going to coincide with the launch of SDO Season 8, The Sphere. And so if you're a Mac user like us and you've been waiting, you've been holding off to get into STO until you could actually run it on your Mac, be sure to go over to StarTrekOnline.com on November 12th and download this. And let's show Perfect World that there are people out there who use Macs who want to play this game.
Yes, finally.
While we're on the topic of Star Trek Online, Char, one quick note here. You know, we had Frasier on last night. And my wife and I were talking about how Kelsey Grammer has played Frasier for so many years. This character was played for so many years. And I mentioned that I'm not positive if Michael Dorn is number two on the list, but he's certainly right up there as one of the actors who's played the same character for the longest amount of time on television, playing Worf 7 seasons on The Next Generation, 4 seasons on DS9, as well as 4 TNG movies, the last of which, Nemesis, came out 4 years after DS9 ended. So it's a long time to be playing Worf. Michael Dorn's coming back to Star Trek Online to voice Worf in the game.
The guy just can't leave, can he?
He really can't. But no makeup this time, thank goodness.
That might be an advantage, yes.
It'd be funny if they made him get in the makeup chair and put on the full prosthetics of Worf just to do the voice.
Oh, man. I bet he would love that. Then he probably would have just said, no, thank you.
That's right.
So, and I wouldn't blame
this. Is a, you know, it's a trend in the game, and I think it's great because it adds realism to the game. There's nothing worse than getting a game where the character is voiced by someone other than the actor who played a character for so long.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, they had Denise Crosby in not too long ago to voice Sela for some missions that they were doing there. They brought the Enterprise C back into STO, which was nice. And as far as Worf goes, they're going to be picking up where Nemesis left off, and Worf is going to be taking on his role as Klingon ambassador. Shar, did you ever really feel like Worf was the ambassador type?
Not necessarily. I mean, he's just a little too Klingon for that. Being an ambassador, you have to be extremely diplomatic, so you kind of have to have a very mellow personality, so that when things get heated, you can take a step back and look at the big picture and then say something that you won't regret. Then again, Worf has been shot down so many times by so many people.
Right.
Maybe that's kind of prepped him for being an ambassador to negotiate. He'll propose his idea, they'll tell him no, and he said, okay, if you won't do that, how about this? I don't know, it's 50-50 for me.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. You know, he can say things like, no, Mr. Federation President, the Klingon Empire is not tapping your phone right now, and we will not tap your phone in the future. Well, were you tapping my phone, you know, for the past 8 years? We are not tapping your phone right now, Mr. President. So I think Worf would be just set for that. You know, the Klingon Federation stuff is, you know, it's always going to be that tension there,
of course.
Matter how close they get as allies.
Right. Yeah. This could be very interesting, especially if they are tapping into his conversations.
Yeah.
What is Worf talking about really late at night to the Romulan ambassador?
Right.
Or, you know, that mysterious lady.
They're probably planning some sort of, get some more Romulan ale or something. I don't know. There probably is a recipe. It's Romulan ale, blood wine, juicers or something.
Oh, maybe it's like a new line of energy drinks. This is what Red Bull's going to be in the 24th century. It's going to be like that combination of Romulan ale and blood wine and just copious amounts of caffeine.
Right. It's called Red Targ.
Instead of giving you wings, what does it give you then? Fangs?
Spikes.
Spikes.
The Targs have the spikes on their legs. Yeah, it gives you spikes.
Mm.
They're gonna buy a Parisi Square Club. They're gonna have Red Targ on their jerseys. So
yeah.
That sponsorship going.
Mm.
So this is what's gonna be going on anyway in STO. Dorn says of the role he's gonna do in STO, Worf has learned he does not have to choose. Even if the writers on STO have him making statements to the contrary, he feels, that life is a journey, and this is just a stop along the way. And maybe next year, he'll make a different choice and rejoin the Federation. You never know with Worf.
Mm.
Right? Because you never know with Worf.
It's true.
One day he's going to quit Starfleet, next day he's going to stay in, next day he's going to kill his brother. You never know. So.
Yeah, it's true. He's a little unpredictable. He just kind of goes with whatever seems like the best idea at the time. I mean, for all we know, he's going to become a cross-dresser and join the cast of Bosom Buddies.
Right, Shar, good work. That is the first Bosom Buddies reference on the Ready Room in quite a while now. So welcome back, Billy Joel.
Yeah.
It has been. It really has been. The only thing that's predictable with Worf, really, is the fact that his suggestions are going to be shot down.
Yes.
All right. So we'll be watching for that as it comes up. All right, Shar, let's take a quick moment to talk about one of our sponsors, and this is Zoe. And, you know, we talked about that t-shirt contest earlier. I think when you get your t-shirt from the We Love Fine design contest, what you really need to finish the job, to pull that, you know, ensemble all together is a Zoe communicator badge. This is the world's first personal voice companion, and it's a Star Trek badge-like technology. It's kind of like the Genesis. You can see the seeds being planted here for those badges that they'll tap in the 24th century. And it's a way of, it can do a couple of things. One, it allows person-to-person connection without phone calls. And it also offers self-service interactions with Twitter and Facebook and Spotify and lots of other services that you use, your email, your music application. You know, you can tell it things like turn off the air conditioner, traffic conditions. If you want to know what traffic's like, you can ask it to read you your Facebook messages or your Twitter messages. You can even have it, you know, play your favorite music. And it's really getting us one step closer. It's something I'm really excited about.
Yeah, this is a remarkable piece of technology that, I mean, this is straight from what we saw on Star Trek, and it's here in the 21st century. This is absolutely fantastic and impressive. It's not even just an idea, it's a real thing.
It's a real thing, right? Yeah, that's the thing. It's not just an idea, it's not just something they have drawn up here. This is a real device. And the Kickstarter page is fantastic. They've got a lot of really great information here that shows real-life applications to this, too, and how it can really help people. You know, it's more than just a gadget. It's more than just a, you know, something fun to have. It actually has very, very nice real-world applications that can be helpful to many, many people. And a lot of people have already backed it. They've had 143 backers already. They've raised $28,417 as of the time of recording this.
Nice.
And their goal is to get to $100,000 to further the development. So you can help them out by going over and checking out the Kickstarter page. And also, there are 7 different incentive levels, and they range from $5 to $10,000 or more. And you can get anything from a t-shirt to an actual seat on the advisory board, and they'll like even fly you out to Washington for the advisory board meeting, all expenses paid by Zoe, which is really cool. And when you donate, you'll also be able to reserve a Zoe device for a special price of just $149. So this is a really amazing thing, and go check it out. I'm looking forward to getting one myself. I'm trying to decide which color I want. That's the hardest.
I was just going to ask
right
you
now.
Which one are you going for?
I don't know yet. I don't know. I keep looking at it, and I'm not sure. The yellow one is screaming out to me because I think it's really cool, but I might have to go with something like a blue that blends better with my outfits. I don't know. It's a tough decision, but you know, you can decide for yourself to go support them and find out more. The best way to get there is to go to zoe.me/trekafilm. That's xoei.me/trekafilm. And you can find out everything you want to know about the device, make a contribution, and be sure to include the Trekafilm portion of the URL when you visit so that Zoe knows that you heard about it here on Trekafilm. And we really thank Zoe for their support of the Ready Room. Okay, Char, let's move on. We've got just a couple of other quick things in news here today. There's been a lot of speculation since JJ has said that he's going to go off and deal with Star Wars, and he's not going to direct the next Star Trek movie, which all the media is referring to as Star Trek 3, and I just cannot bring myself to call this Star Trek 3 or to write the words Star Trek 3. I just refer it to the next Star Trek film.
I am with you, Chris. We've already had Star Trek 3. It's called The Search for Spock.
Yeah, exactly. So
I'm not on board with that either.
And it's not 3. It's the 13th movie. Why do they call it Star Trek 13? That would make more sense, right? If you've just got to put a number on it.
Well, I think it's that whole thing of, oh, JJ-verse versus Prime Universe. That would, if you called it Trek 13, you'd be acknowledging the Prime Universe with the JJ-verse. And, well, heaven forbid.
Well, then call it Space Movie 3. There. How's that?
There we go. That's a deal.
There we go. I know that Ben McCormick will appreciate that.
Yes.
So anyway, the rumor now, this came from Deadline.com. Also, Variety has reported on it a bit. And then various outlets like Trek Movie and so forth have been reporting on it as well. Word is that Joe Cornish is possibly in line. To direct. It started out as a rumor that he might direct. Then Variety followed up on it and said that there actually is an offer. And Variety says this is not the first time that Paramount has made an offer to him to direct this film, that they made an offer back in May while Into Darkness was just launching into the theaters. And at that point, of course, at least publicly, we still thought maybe JJ's going to direct the film. So I guess my big question to you, Char, is do you know who Joe Cornish is?
I was going to ask you the same question. Who is Joe Cornish?
I was thinking Cornish hen, you know, Thanksgiving is coming up and that stuck in my mind. And that's a terrible thing to say. And I don't mean it as any kind of insult or joke or anything. It actually was the first thing that popped into my head because I'm not a big film buff. And I know that there are people listening to the show right now who are going, I can't believe you guys don't know who Joe Cornish is. Are you insane? Yeah. But
please send your complaints to trek.fm/contact.
Right. And this is where, like, if we had Mike and Max on here with us today, they could talk all about it and be intelligent about it. And they would know. But I think that's kind of the point for me. And just the question I wanted to ask you was that, do you think it's important for them to go for a really big name director that everybody knows, the general public? Like, when you say that name, every single person goes, oh, I loved this film and this film and this film that he did. I can't wait to see what he does with Star Trek. Or do you think it's okay, and possibly better even, to go with someone who's not as well known as J.J. Abrams was?
It's tough to determine, because everybody loves to hear a big name, because if you're familiar with somebody's work, you think, oh yeah, they did so good with that film. At the same time, that doesn't mean that person would do a good job with Star Trek. You just want the person that's going to be the best for the director's chair, period, known or unknown. So even though I don't know a whole lot about Joe Cornish, sorry, I just don't. I'm not that much of a movie buff. If he really is the guy who is best suited for the job, if he does an amazing job on Space Adventure number 3, I'll be impressed with him and I will highly, you know, recommend him. If they had something like Steven Spielberg directing it, okay, that's cool, but, huh?
Yeah.
You know?
So I don't know. I mean, I look at the stuff that he's done and, you know, there's The Adventures of Tintin, and of course I know The Adventures of Tintin, but when I think about Tintin, I don't think Joe Cornish. That's not the first thing that pops into my mind. There's the Ant-Man, the Marvel story that he worked on, that he co-wrote with Edgar Wright, who's going to direct the film. And there's just not a whole lot of stuff there. And so, and I know that there definitely are people out there who hear Joe Cornish and they know what he's done and they're thinking, oh, that's a very interesting name. I wonder how that's going to work out. But it kind of takes you back to, like, say, you know, Stuart Baird directing Nemesis.
Oh, God, yeah.
And he had a couple of moments where people thought, okay, you know, he can do this action movie and all. And then when he got with the Star Trek material, and it just didn't quite mesh. And I don't hate Nemesis, but I do hate a lot of the creative decisions that Stuart Baird made as the director. So, and that's a case, too, where you're kind of going with kind of relatively unknown as far as the director goes. I mean, I know Stuart Baird's very well known as a film editor, but I don't know. I'm kind of surprised. I kind of feel like with the money that it's been making, with J.J. Abrams' name being attached to it and him having directed the last two films, that Paramount wouldn't be like a football team, right? Where there's all the speculation right now at Texas, like, okay, if they get rid of Mack Brown, where are they going to go? Oh, are they going to get Nick Saban from Alabama? Because it's like the biggest football program. It's like a professional organization with the resources they have. We got to go for a big name. And I almost feel like with Star Trek, Paramount would want to try to go find somebody with a name that the general public would recognize more.
Yeah. I see the merit to getting that big name to bring in the mainstream audience. But at the same time, I don't know, man. Sometimes there's that diamond in the rough who's really just going to become that next rising star, come out of the woodwork as a result of directing this film. That could happen too. And so
it could,
depends on what Paramount really wants to go for, I guess.
Right. Yeah. And that's a really good point. And that could be the case. You know, he could direct this and it could be the most brilliant film we've ever seen, and it could propel his career. And then, you know, 10 years from now, we could be seeing his name on every TV show and television, just like we see J.J. Abrams right
now. He might be the J.J. Abrams,
Right, yeah, so you never know. So I'm curious. I'm curious what fans think about it. Because
yeah, I'd love to know. They ought to go on our forums and tell us.
Yeah, I'm not in favor of it, and I'm not against it. I really don't have any strong opinion on it. I just thought it was an interesting rumor, and I am curious what fans think about it. So while we're on the topic of Into Darkness, and this is the last thing in news today, and this is really quick, I finally, right before we went on the air this morning, I got an email from Amazon Japan letting me know that finally, the Star Trek Into Darkness Blu-ray, the Japanese edition, is available for pre-order.
Wow.
And the thing is that back when the American edition came out and there was the whole fiasco about the Blu-ray extras.
Yeah.
And dividing them up against all the retail outlets. And I speculated at that time. I said, well, I actually canceled my order. I had it pre-ordered. I canceled it. And I said, I'm just going to wait for the Japanese edition to come out because the Japanese edition will have everything on it. And I'll just buy that.
Now, is that true?
Well, that does appear to be the case from what I can see right now. Now, I just got this right before we went on the air. It's all in Japanese. I haven't had time to compare the titles that they're giving to the special features in Japanese with the American titles to, you know, like see, are these the same features? But it does appear that everything's going to be there. Now, it's going to be released on January 8th, 2014. So like the film getting into the theaters.
So you still have to wait.
I still have to wait a couple of more months for this to come out here. But there are different editions, but they're not divided up by retailers like in the States. From what I'm seeing, and this would, I guess it would kind of be an evolution in the market, but from what I'm seeing, there is no standard DVD edition of this movie. It appears to be Blu-ray DVD combo, but not just DVD. But I'll have to do some research and find out if that's the case.
Okay.
We do have the, like you had in the States, the 3D, 2D Blu-ray set that has the Blu-ray disc and appears to have a limited set of extras. They have the extras broken down into two segments, two different blocks. And this is 5,700 yen, which is about $57. And it appears to have half of the special features and not all of them. And then there is the other Blu-ray set that doesn't have the 3D version. It just has the 2D film, Blu-ray plus DVD. And it has, once again, about half of the special features. Then there is the special promotional set. Like in the States, you guys had the ones with the phaser, replica phaser from PMX. This one has a replica of the USS Vengeance, as well as the comic book. And that's all bundled together for 7,200 yen. And that's, again, about $72. I know these prices sound high, but they're actually fairly normal for Japan for Blu-rays. But it also appears to have half of the special features. Then there's a final version, which is the Steelbook. Which, do they do Steelbooks in the States? I know they do them in Germany a lot. They do them here in Japan.
I am not sure, to be honest.
I think they might do them for some special movies, but you know, they're the hard metallic cases.
I haven't seen one in a long time.
I don't know if you would find them like in Walmart or Target or somewhere, but if you go to, you know, you might be able to order them. But this one is also 7,200 yen. It doesn't have the Vengeance. It does have the comic book, but it does have all the special features. So.
So you have options.
So you have options, but unlike the US where there was no edition that had all the special features, we do have an option here with all the special features, which costs 1,500 yen more than just the standard 3D, 2D Blu-ray set. So that's where we stand with the release. So I know most of you are thinking, I don't live in Japan, so I don't really care about this. But because we talked about it so much on the Radio Room in the past, I did want to update everybody on the release and what's on it and the fact that we are having an option for all the special features.
Just depends on how much money you want to fork out.
Yeah. So I guess my strategy of canceling my order in the States will work out for me anyway. All right. So that's all we have in news, Char, for today. Before we jump into the feature, we're going to be joined by Mariel to talk about the Voyager episode Faces. Let's tell everyone about our sponsor for today's show, Squarespace. And Squarespace is the web's best hosting and CMS that makes it simple and easy for you to create your own blog, website, or portfolio, or even an online store. If you've got stuff you want to sell, there is no easier way to do it than with Squarespace because they have the integrated commerce feature that runs off of Stripe, and it's available in the US, the UK, Canada, Australia, Belgium, France, Germany, Ireland, the Netherlands, and Spain. So they're really, really expanding that market. You know, it was only in the US when it first started, so we're really expanding a lot. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Char, I don't need to tell you that it's the simplest way to create a blog or a website because you use Squarespace yourself.
Yes, I do. I run my personal website, othprofanity.com, on Squarespace. So I did the trial deal for 2 weeks, figured, hey, this is pretty cool. And yes, I did sign up. It is for real. It's fantastic.
It's really nice, right? It makes it so easy for you to put together your page and you just think about your content. You've got the content blocks, you just drag them down the page, and then you can focus on what you want to write about or what you want to show. You know, you're a designer, so you've got artwork up there and stuff, and you don't have to think about putting together the website itself, right?
Right, yeah. I'm not dealing with endless lines of code and things of that nature to try and make it look right. You get the clean design, you put your stuff up there, and it looks beautiful, and then you're done. And you don't have to worry about it. Which is fantastic for when you're doing a project, like if you have an online portfolio that you just need to update here and there as new things that you want to showcase get made. It's so easy. And you don't have to know HTML, so if you don't need to. If you want to go into the back end, you can, but you don't have to. And either way, you have a stunning website that showcases your work. And like me, when I was in my job hunt before, you know, I used my portfolio to get this job that I'm getting. And I'm going to start tomorrow.
Right,
so
yeah, exactly.
This is important.
Yeah. It is important, right? And it helps you easily portray that professional image. And yeah, very important when you're in a job hunt. So I'm glad that worked out for you with Squarespace. So
yeah.
You know, and if you want to sell stuff as well in down the road, Char, you know, on the, I think it was Literary Treks last week, Matthew told me all about his plans to open his BajoranSpringWine.com website.
Oh, yeah, right.
Where
right.
He sells Bajoran Spring Wine. You know, they're authentic stuff too. So
yeah, I wonder how he's doing with that.
And, well, probably pretty well because he's going to use Squarespace Commerce for it. So he's going to use this 30-second merchant sign up with Stripe and it gives him instant approval. No paperwork for him to do either. And he can start receiving money and purchases via direct deposit in just a few moments because, you know, people are waiting to get that Bajoran Spring Wine because, as we know, it's really tasty stuff. And
that's right.
I mean, it's blessed by the prophet. So,
well, right.
There you go.
Yeah, so, we want the spring wine. He gets the money. That's, yes.
Well, that sounds like a fair trade to me.
That's how it works.
The order management interface on Squarespace lets you easily track outstanding orders, resend customer update emails, print packing slips from a single interface. And if you already have an existing inventory on Shopify or Big Cartel, you can move that over to Squarespace Commerce in just a few clicks. So the best way to find out how well this works, or, you know, if you want to create a website like Char did with Squarespace, do what Char did. Go get that 14-day free trial. There's no credit card required. You just put in your name and your email address. And in a matter of minutes, you'll be using all of the exceptional tools at Squarespace to create your own site. If you've already got a site on WordPress, you can, or many other services as well, you can just import that right in. And as a Trek FM listener, you can save 10% off your lifetime purchase on new accounts. And the pricing is fantastic. It's just $8 per month. If you want unlimited everything, that's $16 per month. Or if you want to use the commerce feature, that's $24 per month. It's a fantastic deal. So try it out for yourself. Go to squarespace.com. Use offer code TREK11 to get 10% off your lifetime purchase on new accounts. And also choose the annual plan and you can get a free custom domain registration as well. So we really thank you for supporting Squarespace and we thank Squarespace for supporting the Ready Room and Trek FM and helping us bring all of our shows to you every week.
Like I scare myself.
In the original series, Captain Kirk was famously split into his good and evil half in The Enemy Within, and we got to see how these two very different sides of ourselves are important to making us who we are. When Voyager rolled around, they revisited this concept with B'Elanna Torres and changed it up a little bit to address her human half and her Klingon half, and that was in the episode Faces. And today we're going to talk about that episode, and to help us do that, we have our news editor, Mariel Kieran, back with us from warm, sunny Florida. How's everything going, Mariel?
Going great. Wearing pants. And
That's good. Yeah. That's good to know.
That's not going to make any sense, is it?
That's not going to make any sense. That, for everyone, was the discussion we were just having in the other side of the room.
The other side of the room.
Yes.
And it refers to our mic checks here on Trek FM, which are always related to pants, which you'll find out if you listen to the very ends of some of our shows after the music ends. But Mariel, we're very glad that you are wearing pants today.
And I'm glad, too.
How's everything else going for you?
Okay. It's nice here. Hello. Hi.
I'm in Florida and
nice.
Life is
basically,
good.
Basically.
That's what
yeah.
I hear.
No complaints.
Day in the life of Mariel.
No complaints.
That's awesome.
All right. Well, it's good to have you back with us on the Ready Room. And this time to talk about Voyager. So let's just jump into this episode. And as I just mentioned in my introduction, we had The Enemy Within in the original series, Richard Matheson's great story about the very extreme sides of Kirk. And, you know, the story here with B'Elanna, it's similar in many ways, but they do put a unique twist on it, which is that B'Elanna has always tried to suppress her Klingon side because she felt that that's what made her different as a child. And she felt that her father left them because she looked like a Klingon. And so she's been fighting against her Klingon side her whole life. And I think we all have something about us that we would like to change. We feel like if this were different, maybe we would be a happier person or a different person. And we often overlook the fact that it is that thing that makes us who we are in the first place. So that's B'Elanna's struggle here. And Shar, why don't you, as our Voyager expert from To the Journey, start us off with discussion here about Faces.
Okay. Well, what you brought up is the exact reason why I like this episode so much, because the essential message is we have to have our good and our not so hot qualities to make us who we are. We have to deal with them. And this is just a very extreme version of that. And, of course, B'Elanna has some serious demons going on, and she's literally confronting herself and her issues. And so I think that's fantastic because, as you said, we all deal with this sort of thing. You know, like, oh, God, why did I say that? I'm such a jerk. Or, you know, just some sort of quality about us that we wish we could just, if we could go in and control ourselves and change it, by gosh, we would. We'd do it every time. But same time, got to take the good with the bad. It's not very simple.
So with you, Shar, that's your Beavis and Butthead half, right? And then then you have your Charmin half. Because I know you're a big fan of the Beavis and Butthead.
I am, yes. Because I'm so, you know, cerebral. And I love educational programming.
Well, how about you, Mariel? What are your first thoughts on here? You know, we picked a B'Elanna episode because you said that you are a fan of B'Elanna. Yeah. And this was really, I mean, this is, 15th episode?
14th, I think.
I believe it is, of the first season. Yeah, maybe 14th if you count Caretaker as not split into two episodes. So yeah, 14th, 15th episode. And it was a really good character moment early on for B'Elanna. What were your thoughts on this?
Well, like you said, I love B'Elanna, and I think she is one of the most dynamic characters that you could have on the show because of her struggle, which I think is great that they so early on decided to address that. The having that inside her head, as she mentions at the end, she's always going to be fighting, you know, that half of herself in her head. But we got to see it separated and just kind of like magnified because it's all Klingon versus all human. I think it's a great way to sort of examine who she is. And so early on, I wish we'd gotten a little more of it maybe, but that, I mean, first season, what do you expect? So.
Yeah. Well, this was good development for first season.
Well, that's one of my questions for you guys in this episode itself. I feel like I wanted to see more of that in this episode. I feel like they spend the majority of the time on the rescue operation, and they just touch on the struggle a little bit. Then we get the great moment about 35 minutes into the episode, so very close to the end, with her and Tom. And this part of the story works really well for me, and it's a really great exploration. Do you wish that you had gotten more of this in this episode, or just more of this moving through the series?
I would say more in the series, because I feel like it was pretty rich in this episode. Mm-hmm. There's some fantastic moments. The Tom and B'Elanna moment especially that you mentioned, we're going to have to talk about that more later.
Yeah.
But the level of depth, I would have loved to have seen this happen more, especially with a character like B'Elanna, who kind of just gets thrown to the wayside as soon as Seven of Nine comes on board. It's just, you know, whenever they focus on her, a lot of times it's, at that point, Tom and B'Elanna as the couple, not necessarily as separate people. And then when they do examine something in her life, it's always about one of her parental issues, which I understand has been very, very paramount in shaping her into who she is. Both mommy and daddy issues. Okay, but there's a little more going on than just that. So I wish we could have gotten this level of depth just in a variety of ways throughout the whole series.
I agree. More of it. And like you said, Seven of Nine coming on really kind of put everybody else to the wayside. I'm not necessarily complaining a whole lot because I love Seven of Nine. But yeah, I think, like I said, B'Elanna was a great character that they could have done so much more with. And I don't think she got that.
Yeah. There's, I think, maybe, what, three types of episodes for B'Elanna where she's either angry, or she is romancing, or she is fixing something.
Well, she is the engineer, Shar.
I know.
So I hope she's fixing things.
I'm specifically thinking a couple episodes in season two. It's Prototype and Dreadnought. Both episodes very close together where she's fixing a machine both times. It's at that point in the series where I'm thinking, okay, B'Elanna needs to interact with people now. But yeah, I don't know. Anyway.
Well, I'm glad she was fixing things because, I mean, the option is for Neelix to be fixing things.
No,
I don't think any of us
we don't
really
want that. Leola Root doesn't really work with repairing the warp core. It's just not that versatile.
It could, though. Don't forget, Voyager has bioneural gel packs integrated into the circuitry, so it is possible that Neelix can make some kind of compote out of Leola Root, inject it into the bioneural gel packs, and repair the warp core.
And probably make them sick, like he it's did possible. With the cheese.
Now, what would happen is he would decide that the compote was a little bit bland, so he would take it upon himself to spice it up. And then they would have a warp core breach.
Right, but the warp core would look totally awesome because it would look like a lava lamp.
That's true.
But yeah, you'd have to eject it. And we all know what a pain in the butt that is.
So, well, let's talk about the Vidians for a moment, because they decided to use the Vidians as the impetus for the plot. You know, how would B'Elanna be split? So in The Enemy Within, Kirk is split by a transporter malfunction. But here, I thought that, and again, Voyager's famous for just, you know, teching the tech and finding some sort of technical reason for something happening. This was a great choice of using an established alien race, which is one of the more interesting alien races in Star Trek, because they are, what they're doing is terrible, but you can sympathize with them on some level. Right, because they're actually fighting for the survival of their race. They're not just like the Hirogen who are out for the hunt.
Right. Yeah, they have a very real reason.
So they take the Vidians, and I mean, don't look too deeply into the science of it, but just the idea that they would, in an effort to find a cure for the phage, somehow separate her DNA and duplicate her two halves. It was a more interesting solution than just having, say, a transporter accident.
Definitely.
What I wonder, I mean, would it have killed her to be the cure for the phage? I mean, if it didn't, what was the problem with her helping these people cure something that's affecting so much of their population? I mean, it's kind of not, I'm trying to keep my language clean here. It's kind of not nice to say, oh, well, we've just got to escape. I mean, sure, they were kidnapped, but I mean, understanding that these people are kind of desperate, why not just say, okay, we'll help you out?
Well, I think it's just the circumstances under which everything happened. She was split into two different people against her will. And had they approached her and said, hey, we think your Klingon DNA might be able to help us out, could we maybe do some sort of exchange? I think she would be much more likely to consent rather than just being forced into the situation. Sort of like in Resolutions, where they try to make the deal with the Vidians.
Hmm.
Offer some of B'Elanna's DNA in return for a serum to get Captain Janeway and Coco back.
Well, exactly. And I was going to ask you, how do you think Janeway would have handled this if this episode, and try to think about this situation sort of in isolation, if this episode had occurred, I don't know, say like fifth season or something, because Janeway's a very new character at this point. You know, we're kind of finding out how she's going to deal with situations. And over time, she's kind of loose, right, with how she follows the rules or doesn't follow them, depending on where it's going to benefit them, which makes sense. I mean, I think you kind of have to be that way, actually, to survive and get everybody home, which is why I probably get more frustrated with her when she sticks to the book on principle, no matter what, because you feel like, you know, you have to make some concessions.
You don't like season 1 and 2 Janeway very much, do you?
I think she's stiff.
She's kind of. Definitely.
Yeah.
She loosens up.
And of course, you know, my biggest problem with Janeway is the way that the character's written, because it's so inconsistent. And
that's the big complaint, yeah.
The choices she makes are so up and down, you know.
Have you said that before? I'm not really sure I've heard you say that.
I may have said that. It's quite possible. We'll piece together me saying that. We'll have like a half hour show. Just me saying that.
You can
put
it on YouTube, sort of like that clip, you know, where Worf gets denied. One of those.
Or like the Riker sitting thing.
Oh, gosh. Mm-hmm. Now, there's 17 minutes of clips of Worf being shot down by everyone. Picard, I think even he's shot down by Sisko, I believe, even once he gets to DS9. Guy just cannot catch a break. Anyway, my question is, how do you think Janeway later on down the road, after she's had a couple of years of being stranded in the Delta Quadrant under her belt, how do you think that she would react to this situation?
Oh, that is such a good question. Because a season 5 Janeway would handle this situation much more differently than the Janeway in season 1. Ooh.
I just find it interesting already that the last time they had met, she said, I basically, you know, gave him a threat when they left. And where was the promise on the threat in this episode? I mean, all she did was, I mean...
That's so true.
Where was it? She was supposed to take action against them.
You're right. Yeah, she was threatening them, saying she will use the deadliest of force on them. I guess not.
Guess not.
So much for that. Empty words, Janeway.
Exactly, kind of.
Yeah. It would have been awesome if there would have been some scene where she just could have come in, just total gangbusters, you know, firing on all cylinders and showing off what a badass she is. That'd be great.
So basically, Janeway from Macrocosm, except taking it out on the Vidians.
Yeah,
that's what you want.
Janeway
to see
from Macrocosm on steroids, taking it out on the Vidians.
With the big biceps, and she's got like two blazing phaser rifles, and she's spelunking down into the caves.
Yes, yes, that's what I want to see. Yes,
it's like Jambo, right?
That's a Photoshop waiting to happen.
I can see that. Just don't take Neelix with you because he'll fall and break his leg.
Yes,
and then
they'll take his lungs out
before the. Well, I was going to say, before the Vidians can come and steal his eyeballs, a hawk will fly down into the cave, pluck his eyeball out.
Well, they'll still take his lungs, and so he'll have an eyeball plucked out, his lungs will be gone, and he'll have a broken leg. Just get rid of him.
Okay, can I go off on a tangent
here?
I have a question. If the Vidians had stolen Neelix's lungs after Future's End, when they had the mobile hollow emitter... Could they have put that on Neelix and projected lungs into him for the rest of the
season? I literally, like, I was rewatching season one a couple of weeks ago, and I was wondering that. But he had to stay so still for them to be, like, in the right spot? Probably not.
Oh, that's a good point.
But would the doctor...
I was also going to suggest that later when they have the hollow emitters all over the ship so the doctor can move around, they could just project lungs with Neelix everywhere he goes.
Well, because the doctor would not sacrifice the mobile emitter for Neelix. I'm sorry. He just wouldn't.
No, I don't think so.
No. Sorry, Neelix. I need this. I need to move around. You, on the other hand, will just wheel the bed into the kitchen and you'll be fine.
What do you guys think about the Vidians themselves as a race? As I mentioned, I find them interesting because unlike some villains in Star Trek... They're not just one-dimensional. There is this desperation to them where you can put yourself in their shoes and think that if humanity were in a situation where there was this terrible disease and we were going to be wiped out, we could easily follow the same path that they're following and employ the same methods that they're following for our own survival.
Get out of my head, Chris. Because that's my assessment of the Vidians. I think... What if something like a cancer or the AIDS epidemic, if we'd gotten so desperate for our mere survival, would we stoop down to this kind of tactic? I think the answer is yes. When you're in survival mode, you will do anything to preserve yourself at the expense of another. It doesn't matter. As a race, I love the Vidians. They are one of my favorite aliens in all of Voyager, actually. Because they have such a very real reason for being a villain. I love that.
Mm-hmm.
I can sympathize with them and I can hate them at the same time. And I don't know, it gives them a dimension that's a little different from, say, the Melon or the Hirogen. Especially the Hirogen, because for them, it's a cultural thing. It's all about the hunt. The Melon, they just kind of have a NIMBY attitude, which is a little bit of, you know, both. But... It's not to quite the same.
I like with the Mayline, I like the way they put on the spacesuits and they hang off the sides of the ship as they go around to pick up the garbage.
They just leak everywhere. They ooze filth.
Yeah.
Yeah, you gotta love that. The Vidians, on the other hand, they're kind of grotesque beings themselves. I mean, the things on their faces... What's kind of cool is to see how they vary just a little bit between every person of the Vidian species.
Yeah.
It's a little different for everybody because the disease takes over in different ways, I'm sure.
I was thinking when Chakotay comes in and the Vidian headmaster, keeper of the facility there, says, I've never seen you before. And Chakotay says, oh, I just had my face grafted. I was thinking that life in a Vidian office must be really interesting. You know, you're sitting there, you're like, oh, who's the new guy? He's cute.
Yeah.
Someone says, oh, that's just Bob Land. He's the senior vice president and your boss. His new face was just crafted. So, like, you work with someone for years and then you don't recognize them.
Yeah. That would make the office a little different, wouldn't it?
A little.
Yeah, just a tad. Yeah, everybody's going in for some kind of procedure all the time just to try to stay alive. I mean, that's a very real problem for Vidians. Yeah. Yes.
Did he even ask, like, what his name was? It didn't seem like he was verifying who he was.
No.
just took his word for it.
He didn't do a very good job. Yeah, he was kind of dumb.
Kind of.
I mean, for one thing, not only does he not look like somebody, he doesn't sound like somebody he knows. That really should have tipped him off. But okay, well, you go on and do your thing.
Right. Whatever. I know it's a facility. There are only like five of us here in this facility, and I've never seen you before, but all right.
Yeah.
Sure, I'll take you.
Yeah, come on. That just would not fly anywhere, you know, in our day and age.
Our day and age.
Much less the 24th century. Come on.
So, talking about, you know, face transplants and all that stuff, can we talk about how creepy the Durst thing was? That was gross, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's talk about that. It was just a tad creepy, and it was a superb makeup job.
That was so disgusting.
Those makeup artists, oh man, they deserve all the awards for that.
But it was also interesting that he did that because he was attracted to B'Elanna. Is that what I was reading from that? Like, she was trying to come on to him to obviously escape, and he was liking it? Is that what I was reading from that?
I'm pretty sure, like, if they had been on the same planet together for some time before this, he would have been the guy that, like, in another cave chamber, he's got, like, pictures of B'Elanna all over the walls.
Ooh.
Because we just watched Ted this weekend. We finally got to see Ted. And, you know, there's the scene with all the pictures of the teddy bear on the wall and the little psycho family there. Phoebe's brother is a psycho in that movie. And that's what it... Then when I watched this to get ready for the show, I watched this again. I just thought about the scene in Ted. So,
that's... Wow.
But of course, which is the scene from, you know, countless TV shows and movies over the years of the psycho with the pictures on the wall.
Yeah, well...
Exactly what was going on here with Suran. Yeah,
I never had that vision in my head, but now that I do, Chris, thanks. I'm not going to quite think of this episode.
You never had that vision? Really?
No, I guess I'm too naive or something. I don't know.
That's what I always thought about. He's just so creepy.
But he is creepy. Yeah, the whole face thing, even aside, he's still a little bit of a creeper.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, Ken Biller talked about this as being like the Beauty and the Beast moment where, I mean, which it is. I was thinking that before too, where, except it's more like, I don't know, is it Beauty and the Beast? Is the Klingon half of B'Elanna?
Which is which?
The Beauty? I don't know. But definitely, Sulan leaning over her is very much like the Beast. Mm-hmm. And they did this on Enterprise as well, where they had Hoshi and they had the whole Beauty and the Beast, which was very much like Beauty and the Beast because she's even in the castle. It's like that. But did you get the Beauty and the Beast feeling? He says that when he cut that guy's face off, that's my classic moment in Voyager's first season. So Ken Biller, man.
That's his classic moment?
That's a classic moment.
Okay. Man. I mean, if Michael Westmore would have said that, because he's the makeup artist, I would totally understand that. But Ken Biller? Really? Okay. More power to you, dude. I don't know what else to say.
But it actually is. It is. I mean, it's creepy.
Oh, it is.
It's really creepy. But it is a cool moment in Voyager because it's almost not Star Trek. Like, you don't expect Star Trek to do something
that disgusting.
That's that freakish,
yeah, it's
right?
True. Like, Star Trek...
That's like a horror movie.
Right, yeah, that's what I was going to say. It doesn't... Yeah. Like, Star Trek doesn't really go into the horror genre that much. Like, this is genuinely creepy, a little scary. That first time when you see it, man, you're doing a double take.
Mm-hmm.
Like, whoa! And then to learn that is his actual... Like, the actor's actual face, you know? Because they're making his original face look like it was grafted onto his alien makeup. That is a feat right there. And I, when I read that, that was just, wow. Okay, that is so impressive.
So one other thing while we're talking about the Vidians, and we don't really need a whole section on this per se, because it's sort of a nitpick thing, and I don't mean to nitpick, but as I was watching it, I didn't think about it so much back when this first aired, but as I was watching it again here, As soon as Sulan says that, you know, we've been searching for a race that is immune to the phage, and they haven't been able to find a race in the Delta Quadrant that's immune to this disease that inflicts the Vidians. And the reality scientifically would be that, you know, germs on one planet, they're not going to infect aliens on another planet, because there's a relationship that has to develop, that, you know, a virus is fine-tuned to the ecosystem that it evolves in. So chances are, you know, any virus on any given planet isn't going to have any effect on people outside of that planet. Or maybe it'll just kill them, like it's just so toxic to them, perhaps.
Maybe, yeah.
But it's not going to be this relationship. It's not going to be like an AIDS or a cancer or something like that that impacts us. So I don't mind it in the story, because it's just the justification for why she's there. And then we get on with the real story. And again, for me, the real story is the split of B'Elanna herself. So it doesn't bother me, but it's not a Star Trek thing. It's a general
bother
science
you, but
fiction
you're bringing
thing,
it up anyway.
Well, yes. it's a point in the episode where, like, it doesn't bother me in this episode, but you see, it's one of those moments in science fiction in general, and you see it a lot in Hollywood movies as well.
That's true.
Where you just have to say, okay,
suspending.
Let's go on. But I was just thinking that.
Yeah. Suspension of disbelief.
But Star Trek, you know, tries to get science reasonably accurate most of the time.
Tries, keyword.
And this is one moment. But Star Trek would be really boring, right, if there were no diseases that affected anybody outside of their home.
Yeah. And I don't know. That's such a great thought. I hadn't even thought that much about this topic. Disease being kind of customized for its own little ecosystem. That makes so much sense now, and I never thought about it once until now. You just blew my mind.
And this segment brought to you by Overthinkers Anonymous. Overthinkers Anonymous.
Wow. Yes. Of all the times that I've watched Voyager and all the Vidian episodes, because I like them so much, this has never crossed my mind. Feel like a dummy now, but wow.
It's okay. I didn't think of it either.
I'm still going to suspend disbelief. Well, no, it's still good.
It's also the thing where, let's say in the Delta Quadrant, okay, let's take the leap that the virus gets off of the Vidian homeworld and it spreads to neighboring systems or something, and it evolves over time.
That's true.
But Klingons are from the complete opposite side of the galaxy.
Yeah, I mean, it could mutate. Who knows?
Naturally, they would be immune to it, but I'm not sure that their DNA would actually help cure it.
I don't know.
Mariel is looking at me.
I guess,
like,
I can just suspend it a little more. I don't know. Like, I don't know. I can make excuses for stuff, I guess. I don't know.
It just works for you?
I don't know how diseases work. I'm not a doctor. I'm not... maybe some teeny tiny percentage of a chance exists. And that happens to be it.
Right. You're making too much sense, Chris.
Okay, but let's move on to what this gets us to, which is really the important part of the episode, which is the split of B'Elanna into her Klingon side and her human side. So I'd like to talk about acting Klingon and human in two respects. One is the actual acting that Roxanne Dawson does, and the other is what these two halves bring to her as a whole person.
Okay, yeah, this is great. I wanted to ask you guys what you thought of acting fully Klingon versus fully human, and then, as we know, B'Elanna as the hybrid. How do you think Roxanne did with that?
I think she was brilliant. I mean, she was amazing.
Which side, Mariel, did you feel was portrayed better, the human side or the Klingon side?
I loved her Klingon side. I just thought that was amazing. I loved her. I wish she could have, like, stuck around or something. I loved her.
You know what? I liked her, but I had as much of a problem with the teeth as apparently Roxanne Dawson did. Because especially when it starts out, it does get better as the episode goes on. But you can tell she's struggling to speak with those teeth in her mouth because she sounds like Shelley from South Park. What do U-turns want? You know, and she's just like, in the beginning of the episode, she's enunciating every single word, you know, what have you done to me? Like, nobody speaks like that.
That's a really good imitation.
That is real. That was really good, Char.
Thank you.
That was really good.
I'm known for crashing my impressions onto the journey, so maybe the ready room is where I have my golden moment. Sorry, Lori, interested.
I think the fact that you kept your vampire teeth from Halloween for a couple of extra days so you could do the show here helped.
Well, shh, you weren't supposed to talk about that. It's a secret.
It's interesting for me, and I was thinking again as I was watching the episode to get ready for the show this week, that, so I love Roxanne Dawson. She's a great director. I think she's a great actress. I really like Roxanne Dawson. And I really like B'Elanna. I think she's one of the best characters on Voyager. And I think in this episode, Roxanne's portrayal of the human B'Elanna is brilliant. She does such a good job with that. The Klingon side, I never really liked. But I was thinking this time, and as you're talking about the teeth, now later on when I learned, you know, because when this first aired, we didn't have all the information flow that we have these days with the internet, the way it is now. So at first I didn't know about the teeth and the problem there. And when I learned that, I thought, okay, well, that makes great sense that she's having trouble speaking with these prosthetic teeth in her mouth. And yeah, I totally get that. This time as I was watching, because as you mentioned, it gets better as it goes.
Yeah.
And I almost wonder, and I think this is going to be my canon, even if Roxanne denies it, I almost wonder if that's part of the acting, that being newly separated, she wakes up, she realizes that she's Klingon, and she's really struggling with what's going on, and she's completely unaccustomed, because B'Elanna is always suppressing her Klingon side as much as possible.
Yeah.
And suddenly the Klingon side is just itself, and it's very, it's almost like, and this is not a comparison in any way to Roxanne or anything like this, but just think about, say, a horse. When a horse is born, it stands up. It's really difficult to walk at first. And then it quickly gets accustomed to it and can walk normally. It's almost like that. It's almost like suddenly you're completely Klingon and you're really having to adjust to that. And so it's very jerky and it's very rough. And then as she has a little bit more time being Klingon, especially as she struggles through the phage trying to take over her body, she becomes more comfortable and it really eases out. And then she really feels at ease with herself as it goes along. And by the time you get to the scene where they're roasting marshmallows and rats, she really does seem to be comfortable as a Klingon. So I almost think that you can read this as actually being a really great acting job of struggling with being separated at first and coming to ease with it as you go along.
Yeah, I can see that. That's pretty incredible. Yeah. I'll buy it.
Not used to being that Klingon. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, it's even better than just the teeth, you know? Like, why didn't they let her prepare in the first place to get used to the darn things?
You know, characters are getting prepared for a role they're going to play. So they'll dress a certain way. They'll go to certain places, get used to it. They should give her the teeth,
right?
You know, like a month ahead of time. She can wear them to restaurants, go to the bank, go to the doctor, with the teeth in.
I'll have the fettuccine. I'm sure her husband would love that.
So, yeah, but her portrayal of the human side, I thought was really, really great. I mean, she pulls off the feeling of being fragile that she has so well. And at the one point when the one tear runs down,
God.
I'm always impressed when actors can make themselves
How do they do
cry
that?
In that
That makes me cry. So, that's such a touching moment. It's executed to such perfection. That whole Tom and B'Elanna moment, long before there was ever any hint of a relationship, these two have this moment, which I think is totally cool now in hindsight. Just such a very mm-hmm. intimate getting to know you kind of a thing. I wonder if that is sort of what sets them up for later on. Like, do the writers write this scene and then down the line think, hey, you know, those two really work well together. Should we get them as a couple?
So I'm the only one who kind of thought that was awkward.
I thought it was great.
She's sitting here.
I thought
pouring...
it was great. Okay, so tell us, Mariel, what's awkward about it?
Well, she's pouring her heart out about her father left her and this, that, and the other, and it was because she was Klingon, blah, 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 blah. And then, like, she's obviously having this, like, struggle with being human, and he's, well, I guess you got your wish. That just felt like, ooh, not the best thing to say.
Yeah, I agree on that. That line from Tom, I thought was a little bit insensitive. Yeah.
Really? For season one, Tom Paris, the womanizer? I don't know. I thought it was actually quite telling, because deep down, that's what I was thinking. Was it, you wanted to be human, now you are. And you don't like it now, do you?
I agree on all that. And I do think that the comment was in character for Paris in season one. But I also think it was kind of an insensitive thing to say.
Sure, but
to a woman
who
is
not reading
in front of you and
what she was portraying. He was not reading it. And I mean, I guess that is in character, but I just cringed. I was like, oh.
You wouldn't have wanted somebody,
I think,
if you were pouring your heart out, to react that way.
Yeah, that was not the right response.
I think if he would have been talking with Klingon B'Elanna, that conversation would have been very different. You know, she would have poured her heart out with a lot of more honor, and then he would have made that comment, and she would have slapped the bejesus out of him.
Yeah, right. I can see that.
Look here, Patak! Eat your rat! Stay out of my way!
I actually think this highlights it's not a problem, but it's the, I guess, the reality of watching Star Trek for all of us, that because we've seen all the episodes many times and over many, many years, and so when we go back and we watch all the episodes like this, we naturally read in what we know comes later. So we know that Tom and B'Elanna get married. And so, like, Shara and I see that moment between them, because I also felt like they have this connection from the very beginning, which the writers were not writing.
Right. You know,
that was not a connection between Tom and B'Elanna that the writers were writing. But it certainly feels that way to us now, knowing where they end up together.
Right, yeah. Voyager was never that series that they planned out the whole season arc in advance, and this was all in the cards. No, not at all.
Well, I don't think any series is really that series. I mean, Sisko ends up being half prophet. I don't think that they actually had any idea that Sisko was half prophet until they got to probably the sixth season.
Yeah.
So,
no.
Nothing's planned out, but things appear to be planned out when you look back at them. And the fact that we read that interaction between Paris and B'Elanna that way is also why we think the comment is insensitive.
Maybe so. Because Tom, over time, becomes much more sensitive of a guy.
And attuned to her needs as
definitely
being that struggle.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, he understands it way better down the line than he does in season one, for sure.
So, Mariel, I wanted to ask you, because you're a fan of B'Elanna, would you see the different aspects of her? Because we see her being this hothead in season one, and we learn a bit, especially in this episode, that why she tries to suppress her Klingon side. Although it doesn't always seem like she's trying to suppress her Klingon side, right? She lets it out quite a lot with being hothead, but you can tell that she's disappointed in herself.
Yeah,
a lot of the time, she's one of those people who puts up that front. She's always angry. She's always flying off the handle.
Yeah.
It's like a defensive thing. And maybe she doesn't really like who she is, but she can't stop herself from doing it either.
Right. It's like after she throws the plate at you, then she apologizes.
Right, yeah. What did you think about seeing B'Elanna in these two situations? And with the enemy within, you get the feeling with Kirk. So Kirk is very, very weak without his dark side. But I don't feel that he's incapable of making command decisions. I don't think he's incapable of just being a normal person. Mm-hmm. But here, B'Elanna seems to be completely helpless without her Klingon side. What did you make of all that?
I thought her humans, I mean, I guess I can understand now that you've brought up the whole, like, learning to be Klingon thing. Like, she was probably learning to be human. But, I mean, before you brought that up, mm-hmm. like, I was a little bit like, really? I mean, there's still humans in Starfleet. I mean, they have strength that are, they're trained to be in these situations. Why is she such a wuss without the, you know, like, why? I mean, I can understand having less strength and less, you know, courage, but I've amended that since you brought up the whole, having to learn how to be Klingon. I'm sure she was having to learn how to be human, and that is now my canon, and that just changes the whole thing, so I'm not complaining about it anymore.
So you're okay with it now?
I'm cool with it. I'm cool.
Cool. Yeah. You know, I never really had a problem with the human B'Elanna. When we first see her, she's like, I feel so physically weak. That makes a lot of sense to me mm-hmm. because as much as she hates her Klingon side, she's used to having like a little extra brawn. Mm-hmm. And so to be a weakling human, that you might as well just be an ant and anybody can stomp on you at any given moment. I'm sure that's what it feels like. Mm-hmm. But as a result of like her lack of physical strength, I also think that affected her self-confidence at first. And then going down the line, she does gather the courage to do what she needs to do to escape. Again, it's that whole getting used to thing.
Yeah, she realizes that she's still, you know, got the brain power that she always has, and that's what's going to help her mm-hmm. break the force field to, you know, go into the mm-hmm. computer and do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, I know it's kind of cheesy in a way, but it's also really good that both sides have to work together mm-hmm. to make this happen.
Exactly.
You know.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, it's magnified by having them separated. It's magnified just how much she needs both sides inside mm-hmm. her. Even though she's fighting, she needs them both.
Absolutely. And she really does feel incomplete, separated into two different beings. That's, I think, one of the most accurate statements in this whole episode. It's B'Elanna, but it's not B'Elanna. Mm-hmm. Like, I know that other, especially the gentlemen who have been on the show previously, love the way Roxanne Dawson looks as a half Klingon. She looks incomplete without ridges on her forehead.
Exactly.
Right?
She really does.
She kind of does, doesn't she? Yeah.
Yeah. Seriously, yes. Absolutely.
You mentioned that it is a little bit cheesy. Well, first, the magnifying part, I mean, is something you have to do, right? In order to make the point of the story, you have to really magnify.
You have to
and exaggerate the differences here, especially if you're going to do it in one episode, and especially if you're going to do it where that part of the episode has less screen time than the whole rescue operation does, because you're really trying to make the point in a really condensed moment. Now, if they had let her be separated for a while, you know, like 4 or 5 episodes or more, she's separated and then they figure out how to get her back together and she has time to adjust to the two, you could have a more nuanced look at what it means, what these different sides bring to her character.
Cool.
But the way they do it here, you have to exaggerate. But you mentioned that it seemed kind of cheesy, and the interesting thing is that the writers really didn't like the story concept initially. They didn't want to buy the concept. And there's one comment though that Brandon Braga made, which I don't really agree with, and the reason I don't agree with it within Star Trek is because we have The Enemy Within, which is a very early TOS episode. Mm-hmm. But he said that usually when a show does the evil twin, it's on its last legs and they're desperate. And I can see that in some cases. But again, I think in Star Trek, they did it very well with Kirk, and they did it certainly not when they were desperate. And in any case, they did it when they were telling their best stories written by great science fiction giants. And but he references Data. He says, like, making Data human, why do it? Why see it? Why resolve any of her feelings? And I do agree on that. But why resolve any of her feelings, I think, is important. That I think you don't want to resolve her feelings at the end of the episode. Do you feel like they resolved her feelings, or did they leave it open enough for you that...
Oh, I don't feel like they resolved anything at all, and I love that.
No. And I think that, exactly, that's the perfect ending, is not to have it resolved.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't resolve
it.
Yeah, right, because...
No, I mean...
Yeah, it's not something that you would come to terms with that and be okay with, right?
No, it's not at
it's
all.
One thing to understand that you need, you know, this part of you, but it's another to actually still accept it.
Right. Yeah, you still got to deal with it. And that's going to take way more work down the line than just click, okay, I'm better now.
Yeah, no, it doesn't work that way.
And I don't feel like this was even an evil twin kind of episode at all.
Yeah.
I never saw it that way.
It wasn't, right.
Yeah.
Because that's another difference with The Enemy Within, is that Kirk does have an evil half, right, who's trying to take over. But here, it's actually the opposite.
Neither of them
are
evil.
The bad side, the evil side. Yeah, neither of them are evil. But if you want to say that the Klingon side is the evil side because they're the enemy in Star Trek, she's actually the one that saves everything.
Exactly. Right. Yeah, how evil.
Damn you, your dastardly plan to save us from certain death in these Vidian caves. You're so evil.
One little thing I got a kick out of from Klingon B'Elanna was when human B'Elanna passes out, Klingon B'Elanna just throws her over her shoulder so easily and walks out of that cave like it's nobody's business.
Yeah. Right.
I thought it was kind of an interesting, like, symbolic, you know, visual effect, though, like carrying the human half, because, like, obviously that's the situation where the Klingon half would be the one taking over in her head or whatever you want to say. I thought it was a nice symbolic thing.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yeah.
Of course I'm right. I'm always right.
One thing I was going to mention earlier, too, at some point, and we went off, but before we completely leave this part of the discussion, similarities between Kirk and B'Elanna here and dealing with those two halves is that, you know, the Klingons really respect Kirk because they see him as a warrior, right? They see he's on the Federation side. He's the closest thing to them, I think, that they see, that he is this warrior. And that's what you see in The Enemy Within, when you see just how crazy, out of control Kirk's dark side can be. And then you see here how Klingon, B'Elanna's Klingon half is, that she really is just, she's going to fight. You know, B'Elanna even finally tells her that, you know, well, my plan might not be as exciting as, you know, kicking everybody's asses, but has a better chance of succeeding. And that was the dialogue in the original version of the script.
Oh, they toned it down, huh? UPN said, nah.
They toned it down a little bit. Yeah. They said, you know, Top Model comes on after this. We got to tone it down a little bit. So, but I think I see a lot of similarities there between those two halves of the dark evil warrior side of Kirk and B'Elanna, with the difference being that Kirk has learned how to channel that energy to be productive. It's what helps him be strong, to make command decisions that might go against his orders, but he feels this is the right thing to do. And he gets the strength and drive to do that from that side of himself. But he's able to control it and channel it so that it doesn't take him over. And that's what he learns when he's split and he finds out that he's so weak and he can't make a simple decision without that half of him. And that is a great parallel here with B'Elanna, because it is what B'Elanna finds, that, you know, her half, it's a bit different, but she finds that she has trouble making a decision. Although the other thing I was going to bring up, Mariel, you were talking about how her human side evolves as you get towards the end and she's trying to get the force field down. And she is learning to be human, and she is realizing that she has to stop dwelling upon the loss of her Klingon side. And she starts, and then she remembers, as you said, that she has the thoughts and the brains, and all that is still there in her. And the Klingon half asks or tells her, "You look like you're not scared anymore."
Yeah.
And she says, "I think I just don't have time to think about it." So she also realizes that. So I think actually that I think human B'Elanna would be more capable of moving forward without her Klingon side than Kirk was without his dark side.
I agree. Well.
Yeah. Even though at the beginning I said I think Kirk is better able to just be a regular member of the crew if he doesn't have to make command decisions. But I think ultimately over time, I think that B'Elanna would more easily adapt, I suppose.
Right.
Yeah.
Is what
yeah.
I'm saying.
I mean, had B'Elanna gone on as just a human, didn't need to reintegrate her Klingon DNA, she would have eventually kind of just leveled out and learned to be okay with that aspect of things. Or even, as you mentioned before, spreading this out over a few episodes, I think human B'Elanna would have mm-hmm. been a little reluctant to go back after a little while, because she would have gotten comfortable
kind of
with
so
that.
Too.
Was
yeah.
anyway.
Yeah.
Like, she seemed kind of disappointed that they were going to yeah. put the Klingon back, but, you know, agreed because it was going to kill her or something, if, without
yeah.
the cells or whatever. I mean, there was a little bit of a reluctance that I felt was there.
Yeah. There was definitely a lot of mixed feelings yeah. there, I felt.
Mm-hmm. Think about this. When we talked earlier about when Seven of Nine came on the show and other characters got pushed to the background and B'Elanna got, you know, kind of pushed back as well. And Janeway helped Seven learn to be human again. Imagine if at this point the Klingon side was gone and Janeway could have become a mentor to B'Elanna. And think about how that relationship would have gone on the show, where Janeway actually could have helped B'Elanna learn what it is to be human and not have that Klingon
side. That could be interesting. I could see that developing into a really intricate friendship.
I agree. Mm-hmm. I think they had something in, I'm so horrible with episode names. Was it Parallax? It was like the really early one.
Oh,
where,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
they
right
just,
after the premiere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When they're in the
and
shuttle
they're,
together.
I mean, when
yeah.
they're coming up with the idea of what, you know, has to be done, there's nobody else in that room at that point. They're talking to each other and
yeah.
it's just like, and it's like all the men are behind them. Like,
yeah.
who cares about them? The women yeah. are.
They're having their
yes,
techno babble off.
And they're
and
finishing
it out.
Each other's sentences. I mean, I thought that was, I thought playing off that would have been great. So, I mean, that would have been really interesting if what you're proposing of having her help
yeah.
B'Elanna with the human side like that.
And to the same point, did you ever think, and you have to think back to the first time that you saw the episode, of course, when they beam up and they're on the transporter pad and the Klingon half is dying, did you ever think for a moment that maybe B'Elanna is actually going to be human for the rest of the series and they're going to get rid of the Klingon half?
Not for a second.
No. They wouldn't do that on Voyager.
Yeah,
come on.
You know the reset button is going to get into this somehow. You just do. That's what kind of disappointed me with Trek as the years wore on. I knew that anything serious that happened to the main characters, like if they were at risk of dying, you know that by the end of it, they're going to be fine. Because they're not going to yeah. kill him off.
Unless you were reading Variety and you heard rumors about stalled out contract negotiations.
Well, right, yeah. If somebody is talking about potentially leaving the series, that's an entirely different ordeal unto itself.
Yeah.
But
and then you're like, Jadzia, get out of the temple. Dukat's coming, get out.
Yeah, and then...
What? You don't want to come back for another season? Oh, no.
That's what happens, yes. But aside from contract disputes...
Who said Tar Monster?
And aside from contract disputes and tar monsters and whatever else wants to kill a main character off, chances are they're pretty safe, which destroys a lot of the tension they try to create in a 50-minute episode.
Yeah, it is too bad. So, sometimes you wish they would kill off a character
just to surprise you.
Not
like,
randomly.
Oh my God,
of course.
You did that?
Just to surprise.
Where's the what? The button, it's gone. Oh my God. That would be amazing if that happened once.
Yeah. Yeah. It would add some realism.
It would have.
To a show. So, All right. I mean, they did it on the original Battlestar Galactica.
By your command.
So.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. It's another show.
But then Dr. Z came around and they really jumped the shark. So. All right. All right. Well, why don't we wrap up our discussion here with final thoughts on the episode now that we know that B'Elanna is going to be reintegrated with her Klingon half. So, Mariel, what are your final thoughts on Phasis?
Final thoughts. I mean, I think it's a great episode exploring the characterization of B'Elanna, how she needs both those sides to be who she is. I mean, she can't, as she says, she's not complete. I love anything B'Elanna, so I can't say anything bad about it, honestly. So, I mean, that's where I end up. I can't say anything bad about it. I would probably rate it 9 out of 10 face grafts.
Okay.
Okay, very good.
That's a lot of skin grafts.
Yeah.
How about you, Char?
Yeah, especially for season one of Voyager, this is very high up on the list for me. I really enjoy it. This is the kind of examination I wish we could have had with all of the characters to get to know them. And I don't mean that by splitting them all up into different halves and exploring that, but I just mean the level of depth at which we get to understand our character. I thought it was an incredibly well-written episode. It's intriguing. It makes sense. Despite the whole Vidian disease thing and how within their planet, blah, 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 the science, oh my God.
Stop looking at me, man.
Apparently only Chris really has that problem, though.
Chris has a brain. Ah, he thinks about these things. Ah, but I didn't, and so that's just not in my canon. I'm going to ignore that, so I appreciate the Vidians even more. Yeah, I really like it. I like it a lot, and so I'm going to give it 9 cooked rats.
Oh, yummy.
Nom, nom, nom.
Well, I also really enjoy this episode. It's a great performance by Roxanne Dawson, and it's a great character moment. Like I said, I wish that they had spent more time on B'Elanna in the story because I like to have, let's just take Waltz on DS9, where you have Sisko and Dekat in the cave, and the crew is on the Defiant, and they're trying to rescue Sisko. But they only cut back to the Defiant just a couple of times, very briefly. And then at the end, they pick up a signal and they're there. But the story is all Dukat and Sisko. And I would have loved to have seen this story portrayed that way a little bit more, where it really was B'Elanna and it was the Klingon half and the human half more, because there's such great stuff in here. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to see that explored a little bit more. And I would have loved it if they had actually left her split for a few episodes, as I suggested.
That would have been cool.
At any rate, it would have been cool, but I really enjoyed this episode, and it's really creepy. I do like the Vidians, as I said. So, very good first season episode. You know, a lot of series don't have great season one episodes because every TV show has to find its footing. And this is definitely a good season one episode that I actually, when I went to get my DVDs out to watch it, I grabbed the season two box set first because I was thinking of this as being at least a season two episode, just because the quality of the episode and the portrayal of B'Elanna by Roxanne. So very good. And I'm going to give this 8 sets of prosthetic teeth.
Fantastic.
All right, Mariel. Well, I really appreciate you taking some time out of your warm, comfortable Floridian night.
It's a little cool out. Come on, it's not that warm.
Voyager and Phasis.
It's like what, 68, 70?
It's more like 60. Come on.
It's like people are expecting snow, running to the store to hoard bread and milk, right?
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, before we go, tell everyone where they can find you around the network and around the interwebs.
News editor for Trek FM. So check there for all your Trek news. And on Twitter, I am a Florida girl, all separated by underscores.
Great. Soon to be a Florida girl with pants. Also
graded by I'm already a Florida girl with pants. Let's just make that clear right now.
It's just a little long for Twitter, so you shortened it, right?
Yes, exactly.
It's a little bit longer.
With pants, yeah. We'll just assume that you're always wearing pants.
Exactly. Oh my gosh, that's not going to be lived down, is it?
Never.
All right. Well, thanks again for joining us, Mario.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Chris, as always, I have a fantastic time discussing Voyager with you here on the Ready Room, as well as Mariel this week.
Was I nice to Voyager this time?
For the most part, yes. I'd say you were meaner to logic and science than you were to Voyager. You thinker, you.
Yeah. No. I like Voyager, and I do like this episode. I really do like Roxanne Dawson and the way she portrays B'Elanna, I think, all through the series. It's very natural, especially when you get beyond the first season. And that's why I was actually thinking initially that this episode was a little bit further along, just because B'Elanna kind of loosens up a little bit, I feel, as you go along. So
she does, yes. And like you said, Roxanne Dawson, just absolutely superb with her portrayal, especially in this episode.
If you get the Enterprise Season 1 Blu-rays, I don't know if you have them or not, but if you get them, there is a special feature on there about the making of the Enterprise episode Vox Sola, which was directed by Roxanne. Mm-hmm. Really good. Really good feature just to see Roxanne's thought process in directing and how they set up and how she figures out how to shoot an episode where the villain is like a bunch of plastic wrap and stuff that's strung from the ceiling.
Okay, this I've got to see. You've sold me. I got to get the Blu-ray now.
Yeah, it's quite good. So, all right. Well, as much fun as it was talking about the two sides of B'Elanna, it's not the only thing we've been talking about here on Trek FM this week. So here are some other things you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Kirk versus computers.
Like there was some kind of salesman going around selling this life-controlling model.
It's like the iMac, you know? Everyone had an iMac back in 1999 or whatever it was, right? The Bondi Blue Landrew.
Earl Grey.
Data. I think the only other time we see Data in red is, I think, in one of the parallel jumps in Parallels.
Yeah. I think it's Future Imperfect, maybe.
With that funky combat.
Is Data in red kind of like the song Lady in Red?
Data in red.
The Orb.
The Jordan Prophecies.
Well, you know, I was thinking that Horan was probably not so much a prophet as a Bajoran songwriter who just wrote really bad lyrics.
The Ready Room.
Or the Uniform.
Because, I mean, I didn't see Eddington feeling he was the bad guy in this.
Oh,
he
no.
was doing what he believed in.
Yeah.
Where I think Sisko seemed to me, you know, he definitely started to white whale on this.
To the journey!
Samantha and Naomi Wildman.
She acted like a normal kid, except extremely smart.
Yes. Yeah, granted, even though she was incredibly bright, because all Trek kids are, they're extremely advanced in the 24th century, she wasn't annoying like Wesley.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
The Black and Cushman interview.
Gene didn't really delve into anything with any depth. I think he played the cards very close to his vest. He knew what he wanted, and he made sure he got it. And that's why he rewrote writers, and that's even why he rewrote me.
Warp 5.
The Temporal Cold War.
But as you say, with Archer, or Future Guy, if we were to assume it's Archer, he's not just making, you know, changes on a small detail or trying to recapture. You know, in Anorax's case, it's getting his wife back.
Right.
He's looking to completely change the course of history on a much broader scale.
Trek News and Views.
The Data Network.
With the Data Network, I wanted something that the Star Trek fans had already there. They didn't need to do anything. They just had to come along and be the Trekkies selves.
Literary Treks.
Warren Ivory.
Yeah, I thought that was great that they finally explained that question that you had, why there are no gateways within the Bajoran system, and that that's not necessarily true, and that the fact is that the Iconians know the prophets.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and get your daily Trek Talk fix. We have new Trek Talk for you every day of the week, and some days now we even have two shows for you, and you'll find them in many places, including iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, Xbox, Zune. You can stream or download from the website, and you'll find links to everything at trek.fm/pd for podcast directory. Now, Char, let's tell everyone where to find us if they'd like to share their thoughts on anything we talked about today, on Faces, of course, on B'Elanna, or on whether or not they think Joe Cornish would be a good director for a Space Movie 3, also known as Star Trek 13.
Not Star Trek 3.
That's right, not Star Trek 3. You can go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. You can choose to send to a show and choose the ready room, and that will come to us by email. And also, if you'd like to send us a voicemail, you can do that from the website as well. You can click the tab you see there, use your webcam's microphone to record a message, and upload it to us as an MP3 file. If you'd like to talk to other listeners and the rest of the crew, you can do that in our forums at trek.fm/forums. And also, in social media, you'll find us at facebook.com/trekfm, and you'll also find us on Twitter, tweeting away about Star Trek under username Trek FM. And also, I'd like to remind everyone about questions from the fleet. If you have any questions about Star Trek that you'd like us to answer here on the show, just go to the same contact form, trek.fm/contact. There is an option there for questions from the fleet, and you can send us your questions, anything you want to know, anything you want to ask us about Star Trek, and we'll answer that here on the Ready Room. All right, Char, what if people want to find you? You talked about in the Squarespace spot today about your personal website. Where can people go to find out more about what's going on?
Well, the first and best place probably is to check out Twitter, where I post as Oh the Profanity. But you can also find me at ohtheprofanity.com, which is my Squarespace site. And you can find me all over Trek FM, but especially on To the Journey!
To the Journey!
With Lori and Tristan. Yes, new episodes drop every Thursday, and if you want more Voyager discussion, we've got that all day, every day for you on To the Journey.
That's right, great. So if you want to find me, you can find me on Twitter as well. My username is not O the Profanity, it's C Brian Jones. That's the letter C and Brian with a Y. And you can find me pretty much everywhere in social media under that same username, as well as on my personal website, which is also a Squarespace site, at cbrianjones.com. And then elsewhere on the network, you can find me with Matthew Rushing on Literary Treks, where we talk Star Trek books and comics and interview authors, and on The Orb, where we talk exclusively about Deep Space Nine. And you'll also find me on Warp 5 with Kate Walsh, where we talk exclusively about Enterprise. So check all those shows out as well. And also, before we let you go, we'd like to ask you to please support our sponsors for this week's show. And first, there's Squarespace, the web's best hosting and CMS that makes it simple for you to create a beautiful blog, website, portfolio, online store, or like Char and me, you know, your personal website, your place on the web. Go create your own space today. You can try it free for 14 days and then use offer code TREK11 to save 10% off your lifetime purchase on new accounts. And you'll find that at squarespace.com. And again, don't forget to choose the annual plan to get the free custom domain registration as well. And we really thank Squarespace for their support of the network and the Ready Room. And also Zoe, again, that's the world's first personal voice companion that we told you about during news today. Help us get to that Star Trek com badge-like future. This device supports many real-life applications. It's a really fantastic concept, and you can find out more and support the Kickstarter campaign by visiting zoe.me/trekfm. That's xowi.me/trekfm. And don't forget to include the Trek FM portion of the URL so that Zoe knows that you heard about it here on Trek FM. And we really thank Zoe for their support of the Ready Room as well. Plus, if you'd personally like to help us out in what we're doing here at Trek FM, help us bring the shows to you every week, you can go to trek.fm/donate, where we have 8 original alien illustrations by Tobu Ushi, who does most of the great artwork that you see on our website. We have these available as badges and as art prints. You can mix and match, choose which ones you want, let us know which aliens you like, and we'll get those over to you. And there are different contribution levels that you can make, and your support helps us pay for the cost of production, hosting, and bandwidth that's needed to bring all of our shows to you every week. So again, that's at trek.fm/donate, and we really thank you for your support of the network. All right, Char, it's lunchtime here. I'm getting kind of hungry. I'm going to go wander back down through the caves and see if Klingon B'Elanna has any of that rat kebab left.
That sounds good, Chris. I think it's time to stick a set of Klingon teeth in it, because this ready room is done!
Okay, yep. Just go ahead and hit record, yeah. So you have a waveform?
Yeah, it's gone.
All right.
Yes, you got to do your pants check. That's
Well, I haven't figured out the excuse yet for not having any, okay. So...
Well, it's because it's...
No, I'm kidding, I'm wearing pants.
You live in Florida, and you know it's too warm to wear pants.
There you go.
Pants are optional.
That should be the new like Florida state slogan. Welcome to Florida. Pants optional.
Be on the license plate. Yeah. Instead of the Sunshine State, it says the Pantsless State.
Oh my goodness.
You'd get a lot more tourism.
That would bring a tourist in by draw. Yeah. Yeah.
That's right. You walk out of the, you cross the state line and they make you take your pants off before you can proceed. Yeah. They used to give you freshly squeezed orange juice when I was a kid. At the Welcome Center. Now they just make you take your pants off.
Oh, Florida, you've gone too far.
Florida has changed.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll say.
Just wait till Disney World implements that pants no entry policy.
Donald Duck.
Exactly, everyone. Yeah, Donald Duck. He's the new voice of Disneyland. Disney World, I should say.
Oh, my God.
An Epcot Center. Where the P stands for pants.
Okay, Chris, you've gone too far now.
All right.
Wow. You just blew Mariel's mind.
I won't tell you what the C stands for. So, okay.
Oh.
Let's.
For crying out loud, I had to take a drink then. Jeebus, I just almost spit on my screen.
Now you know how Matthew feels.
I do, yes. Shame on you.
Okay.
Lead us
into the discussion here. And I'm making this completely up because I didn't have time to think about it.